Hello everyone, this is Joe Cristiano and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday, March 15th. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the Ides of March, 2007. It is now about 6:31 a.m. Central Time in the good old United States. Folks, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio, where you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Rio de Janeiro, Berlin, or Stalingrad. It's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our liberty, our property, our freedom, and our rights. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Good morning, everyone. During our live broadcast today, we can be reached, and you can participate in this broadcast live by dialing 646 area code 652-4620. I'll repeat that. 646 area code 652-4620, and you'll be on the air. At any other time when we are not broadcasting, we have another number to call where you can leave a message, and that is area code 903-551-2186. I'll repeat that. Area code 903-551-2186. You can leave a voice message. And of course, at any time, you can email us at comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, now on to today's broadcast. I must start with an apology in that last Sunday evening, we interviewed a very engaging individual, Steve Cubby. He is looking for the nomination, the Libertarian nomination for President of the United States. Unfortunately, our phone lines weren't doing all that well. He was calling from his car. He was going to an engagement at the time. We were very fortunate to have him on the air. But he was calling from his car on a cell phone, and our connection was horrible. It was very low. I checked our statistics, and our listenership was way down, and I suspect it would be because it was difficult to listen. And that is, actually, it's all my fault. Let me put it this way. I'm in charge of the station. It's all my fault. First of all, I should have terminated the broadcast and then have him call back at a time when he was on a when the lines were clearer, number one. And secondly, I should have adjusted the radio station to a point where you can hear me and him on sort of an equal basis, because I was very loud and he was very soft. And if I was listening on my computer or whatever, or my phone, I wouldn't listen to it very long. So that's exactly what happened. My apologies. I will attempt not to have that done again. Okay, I learned my lesson. I guess I'm relatively new to this game, but I learn as we go along. Unfortunately, at the expense of my listenership. Okay, number one. Number two, I want to reiterate something. This is very important. I get calls and people asking, why don't I talk about the issues, specific issues? Why don't I talk more about what Obama is saying, what Hillary Clinton is saying, what the status of Giuliani, all those things. And my response to that, and I really want you to understand this, my response to that is that's all noise. I mean, of what value is it for me to say, oh, geez, this person said this thing, and I agree, that's very good, I disagree with this, and whatever. Unless we truly, if we understood where we stood as libertarians, where we all should be, and not only in the United States, but around the world, we should all be libertarians. We should all believe in ourselves. We should all own ourselves. I don't care if you come from South Africa, Australia, Indonesia, China, Bangladesh, Brazil, Mexico, Canada, it makes no difference. We should all be governing ourselves around the world. That's the point. Now, it's very difficult for us to understand that because we have been drilled with ideology that makes absolutely no sense other than to the people who are espousing it. And who those people are, I don't know. But they're most likely people with a heck of a lot of money and probably control the money flow of things going around the world, the oil, the money, and whatever. And they like to have things go their way. You know, if it means starting a war, yay, let's start a war, you know. And, they 3 million people get killed, so what? We profited by it. That's the only thing that counts. These people know no national boundaries. They have no political affiliation. But philosophically, they are attacking us. Now, this program is the antidote to that. I'm saying let's attack back philosophically. I'll leave interviews with the individuals on individual issues, for the most part, with the Bill O'Reillys, with the Laura Ingrams and Glenn Becks and those people. Here, I want to make sure we understand, we educate ourselves on what the right thing to do is. You may not like it. It may be very uncomfortable because it's something that you've never been exposed to. We talked at length about government schools, and government schools wouldn't even trace anything that I'm saying in the classroom. In fact, the amount of civics being given in the classroom and what they're teaching as civics in the classroom today is shameful. We should be teaching our children to be independent, critical thinkers, to be patriots, to be revolutionaries in thought, and dissidents in action. Now, that does not mean that we should overthrow the government every time we don't like something. I'm not saying that. But we should question it. Where we are today is that we are convincing through this propaganda in our public schools that the United States is good, everyone else is bad, and everything that we've done was for their good. Even if we stole their rights, we take their money away, and we squander it, it's for their own good, and we grow up believing that. This is the antidote to that. And that's why I don't spend time criticizing or complimenting competing radio stations or political hacks or political nominees. To me, it's a waste of time. Because if we don't understand where we're coming from, it's of no value. I want you to be able to evaluate that based on libertarian principles. Okay, all right. I'm going to spend some time. I think this thing is a little bit too loud. Let me see. Okay. I'm going to spend a little bit of time, quite a bit of time, rather, on a very lengthy email. Because this email touches on several subjects that we've discussed before, and it's all wrapped up into one. But before I do that, I have something from the Oklahoma Council of Public Affairs, of which I am a member. And it says here, this is just a little quip before we start our program, tax cuts are good because they stimulate economic growth, making people better off by several multitudes of the amount of tax revenue the government loses. The government loses. Remember that. A good rule of thumb is that a tax cut induces $1 to $2 of additional economic growth. Conversely, tax increases are bad because they impair economic growth, making people worse off by several multitudes of the extra amount of tax revenue the government collects. Correctamundo. Generally speaking, an additional $1 of tax money for the government to spend costs the economy not only the $1 of tax, but additional $1 to $2 in lost income. Another good common sense rule of thumb is that when the government gets extra tax revenue, it usually spends $3 to do a $1 job. So why not cut taxes and spending? There's plenty of room for reducing the $2.9 trillion federal budget without cutting anything even resembling muscle or sinew. Now, this is interesting. Do you know how much 2.9, let's say $3 trillion, do you know how much that is? If we took $100 bills, $100 bill, and stacked it on the floor. Right? When it reached 40 inches high, right, for some of us that would be about chest high, when it gets about 40 inches high, that would be $1 million. Now, here's $3 trillion. If you did the same thing with $100 bills, it would go up to about 3 miles in the air. In other words, our 747s would be hitting the top of that pile. That is the amount of money that represents $2.9 trillion. Our national debt would go out the stratosphere. Isn't that unbelievable? We can't not imagine how much that is. And I'd love to do a segment someday on our money situation, on the debt, the M1, M2, M3 money supply. I've got to get around to that. I'm dying to do that show. But I get some emails that I really need to answer and that diverts me. This is one of them. Okay? Now, this one is, you know, I should get these people's names in advance. Oh, this fellow didn't leave his name. That was a problem. And I don't want to give away his email address. And but he did not leave his name. He left his email address, and I emailed him back. But I do not have his actual name. Okay? So we'll call him Mr. Email. All right, Mr. Email, or Mrs. Email. I'm not sure. And he says this. And this is going to be a little lengthy, but I'm going to break it up, and then we're going to discuss it from a philosophical point of view, from a libertarian philosophy point of view. As a past libertarian, I am a little surprised at the party's continuance in light of its free borders mentality. Does the party still endorse free borders in light of the 35 million plus invasion that not only is causing the moral bankruptcy we see in our electeds, but causes the American people to compromise even their beliefs in economic equality? All right, let's stop right there. I do not speak for the Libertarian Party. I speak for libertarian principles. And I'll give you an example. I went to a conference one time, convention, Libertarian convention. And there were people there who were actually in accord with the war in Iraq. And they were libertarians. Now, that part of the Libertarian Party, I adamantly opposed the war in Iraq, and it violated every single libertarian principle I can think of. So I don't like to discuss party, although the party and the philosophy should be the same, but sometimes they vary. I'm only speaking on behalf of libertarian principles. And the answer there is yes. Libertarian philosophy believes in open borders around the world. We move goods freely from country to country. We should be able to move people from country to country. We have fear of that, and we'll discuss that a little later on because he addresses this. So the answer is yes. We are still philosophically for open borders. He says, there is no job that will not be gleefully performed by Americans provided an ethical wage. Now, I must take exception to that. The business that I'm in put me in factories every single day. And in many of those factories, these fellows made real good money. It was a tough job, but they made very, very good money. Nobody, or very few that I ever met, and I'm talking about tens of thousands of people that I met over my career, were very gleeful. And many factories, they could not get people to work at all. Their turnover was phenomenal, and one reason is either people didn't show up for work on a regular basis, or they had a drug problem. And I'm talking about, you know, Native Americans. And the default was to hire people who didn't even speak English, which was a real concern for them because it made the production process a lot more cumbersome, but they had no alternative. Now, let me tell you something. I'm in these factories all the time. They don't say, hey, we're not going to hire Americans or Native Americans. I shouldn't say Native Americans because I would be Indian. But we're not going to hire people who've been born here. We're going to bring these people from overseas or bring them in from Mexico to work. Because many of these factories are very large. They have payrolls, and they can't have paying one person, not pay the other. And so they have to put people on payroll, and they have to have fair trade, whatever, some of the union shops. But so it's very, very complicated. Yes, there are people who hire illegal aliens, and they pay off of the table. They don't pay their taxes and stuff like that. Admit it. But that's not the problem of the of immigration. That's not an immigration problem now, right? That's an employer who's participating in tax evasion, right? So I think it's important that we discuss the problem, you know, and not blame the problem on the people that we don't particularly want to come here. In other words, let's not blame everything on the poor Mexicans or the Guatemalans or the Costa Ricans or whoever comes here. Let's not blame it on them because the employer is not withholding taxes. If the employer is not withholding taxes, that employer should, in fact, be fined, go to jail, the company should be closed down, or whatever the punishment is. So, no, there are jobs in which we, as people who were born in America, who were brought up in our culture, will not do. And I beg to differ you, we will not do them. And some aren't all that bad, and we still wouldn't do them. I mean, we're not talking about slave labor. We're talking about working in factories. Sometimes they're pretty hot and muggy. You know, sometimes they're noisy. And sometimes it's physically hard labor, but not really all that hard, believe it or not. Still, machines do all the hard labor. They don't have to pick up metal stuff anymore. They have cranes and hydraulics. But they're long hours, you know, but they could make some good money. And now let me say this. Let me extend this out a little bit. If, in fact, you found an illegal Mexican, illegal alien, doing that work, you know, and that person did a good job, that employer doesn't want to lose that person. And they'll pay that person better. And if that person had a half a brain cell working, they would apply for their citizenship. They would apply for a work permit or a green card or whatever they have it these days, call it these days. And then that person would be the supervisor of the other ones coming in who may be illegal. And the person would make a lot more money. There is still opportunity, even within the system, as bastardized as it is. You know, so I have to wholeheartedly disagree that Americans will do that job. I have people in my own family, my own sons. There's work opportunities for them that just, in my opinion, geez, no one ever offered me that. And they say, no, I don't want to do it. You know, I'd rather just do that. So not there. Okay, here we go. He says the tolerance. Let's see. However, the big lie of the American jobs Americans won't do has created the attitude of tolerance to this invasion of low, no-wage workers. I disagree. It's not an invasion. We're inviting them. We have industry that has a need. And our industry competes not only domestically but internationally. And we all have to be prepared to do that. And if that means working for a lower wage, then we, as an individual, we own ourselves, have a responsibility to ourselves, say, you know, I don't want to be an iron worker or whatever the job is, because I have to then compete with people who are willing to work for less than I would work for. So I'm going to become a welder or a computer programmer or a truck driver or something. I mean, in other words, I'm going to do something other than what I'm doing now because I am uncompetitive, economically uncompetitive with the workforce out there. That's how I own myself. I just don't arrive on the scene and then say, here's a job, and now you, industry, owe me X number of dollars an hour. And if someone else comes in and says, hey, I'll do it for half the amount, that's unfair. Don't kid yourself. That company has to stay in business. They have to compete against everyone else. If they did not hire the foreign workers who are willing to work for less money, one, that company, one, may be out of business, or two, would be uncompetitive and would have to reduce its business. So it is creating jobs for everyone. Remember, every time a business is in business, they're conducting business, there are trucks moving in and out, there's advertising being done, there's distribution centers that are doing distribution. I mean, there are a lot of people involved. When you take someone out of that system, out of that whole cycle of business, what occurs is that there is loss of jobs, not only for that company, but then the truck driver doesn't show up because there's nothing to transport, There's nothing to store in a warehouse. There's not that much to sell to the next consumer all the way down the line. There are lots of jobs lost in the entire cycle. So we want to keep the cycle going, and the only way we can keep the cycle going is if we are competitive. And we cannot screw around with the law of economics. Now remember, we own ourselves as libertarians, and we all should be libertarians. And that means this person who is in this job saying, I cannot support my family on $7 an hour, I need to make $12 an hour, that is not the company's responsibility, that is that person's responsibility. Then he's got to go back to school, maybe get a job as a welder. Welders get paid $15, $20 an hour in certain areas. I know here in Oklahoma they get paid very well. And the biggest problem is that, and I speak to the human resources managers, I ask them what their problems are as far as hiring. They say, well, if we can find a welder, or we can find this kind of guy, find that guy, you know, who's not on drugs and not an alcoholic, we'd hire him. Now, they're not talking about foreign borns. They're talking about American borns. And they're having a hell of a problem. So it's not the fault of the industry. It's the fault of the individual, because the individual is the only one that has total control over their lives. I can guarantee you right now that there is no one in my studio with an AK-47 that is cocked and pointed at me, and they're saying to me, if you don't broadcast, we're going to blow you away. And I don't get paid for this. This is my dime. Because I elected to do this. They have to elect to do this also. When I say the this, it has to be the thing that they do, whether it be welding, computer programming, truck driving, cabinet making, whatever it is. And we are so fortunate in America today to have technology centers that'll teach people how to become cabinet makers, woodworkers, masonry workers, and whatever. And, you know, you don't have to work for another company. You make some cards up for about $5, $10 today. You can do it on the computer for practically nothing. You know, go door to door, hand them out, and I can guarantee you you'll get jobs, and very well-paying jobs. Most people I know who do that, the problem they have is they can't keep up with all the work, and they have to hire people. It doesn't take much, but they have to get off their duff and do something for themselves and not wait for the government to do it for them. That really grates at me, really just grates at me. I do work for the Job Corps. That's a federally government program. I have to go there. We have to do some health stuff for the employees, the students, not the employees, their students, and training, whatever. What a horrible place. What an absolutely horrible. I am so depressed when I get out of that place. You have no idea. It takes me about 24 hours to get back to normal. Attain my equilibrium, as I say. And you look at the facilities they have for cabinet makers and masonry makers and all sorts of trades. And it's I'm paying for it. And these kids go in there, they don't care. They don't realize what they have. They walk out with a trade. I couldn't do what these kids do. And some of their work is phenomenal, is outstanding. And they leave, and what do? Nothing. Man, if I knew how to put one brick on top of another, make mortar, or especially cabinet work, and the work and the equipment that they have for the kids are unbelievable. And yet, it's a basic flop. And they don't have to work for minimum wage. They can work for $25 an hour when they get out. Anyway, let's go on. Nations aren't murdered, they commit suicide. I agree, absolutely correct. He says, if Americans won't defend theirs when they hold all the cards, what will they do when under attack? As in this simple example. We're not under attack. We are over-attractive. Attack, attract. We are attracting. We're not attacking. They are not attacking. We are attracting. And that's the difference. We need them. And without that, our economy wouldn't grow. If our economy didn't grow, we would be in recession. If it was not for the immigrants coming in, our population growth would be just about nil. And that means people wouldn't be buying stuff. And that means we wouldn't be producing stuff to be sold here. The immigrants are the ones that are keeping this economy really humming. You don't realize that. We don't realize that. We just see the negative part. It says, and without some serious moves by those that have the most to lose, native-born citizens, the outcome is a foregone conclusion. Now, wait a minute. We say native-born. Native-born, are you talking about the American Indian? Remember, we came here and we slaughtered them. And now we say this is our country. And now that it's our country, we can dictate who comes in. I don't think that's fair. That's not a fair ball game. It's like I come over with a gun, I steal the ball, and I say, I just won the ball game. You know? And anybody else who wants to play against me can, but if you beat me, I'll shoot you. I mean, would that be a fair ball game? That'd be stupid, right? And that's exactly what we did here. We stole this country from the natives. And then we say, well, it's ours, and now no one else can come in. How hypocritical could we be? He said, no utopia of all races and cultures has ever succeeded. And that's true, absolutely true. I agree. Neither will this one be successful in its mommy state aspirations. What's salient here is a love of freedom, liberty, individual prerogative, and an immediate end to the pap and fairy tale ideology we are being force fed by the parties. I congratulate you on your efforts to break this claptrap excuse for government. Well, I thank you very much for the compliment. But what's at stake here is freedom. Now, how can we espouse freedom if we deny freedom to other people? It's hypocritical. If we're talking about freedom and liberty, we're talking about freedom and liberty here in the United States. And if we're talking about freedom in the United States, are we saying that if you own a business, you are not free to hire who you want to hire and pay what you want to pay, but only you can pay what the government dictates what you have to pay? Is that freedom? You see, if we go down this path, the logic that you have here in your email, you'll be restricting freedom of industry, restricting the freedom of the people who own the businesses, and that would not be right. He says, the overwhelming majority of Americans are white Christian Protestants and demand that their country be comprised of those like this. Oh, absolutely. I agree. And that's the problem, you know. And if we were mostly Jewish, we would only want Jews coming in. And that's the problem. But the United States is rights for all people to pursue in the pursuit of their happiness. All people. Just people. White, black, green, blue, whatever. In the pursuit of happiness. And let's not forget that. A political party that embodies the pride and prejudices of border citizenships and complete return to those ideals embodied within our Constitution A political party that embodies the pride and prejudices of borders, citizenship, and a complete return to those ideals embodied within our Constitution does have a real chance at viability. Well, again, it's a matter of definition. I don't think there should be pride and prejudice of borders. I think that's very, very prejudice. And I think that what we're trying to do is end prejudice. He goes, an overwhelming majority would end all immigration. Absolutely. And that's the problem with a regular democracy. If you had, let's say, 51% Protestants and 49% Catholics, and they voted, should we have a Protestant form of government? Yay, we do. But see, that's the problem with a democracy. And then 49% of the people have to live in a restricted manner, at least religiously, and demand full prosecution of those employing illegal. Well, yeah, I agree. If they're breaking the law, let's do that. But let's look at the laws and see if they're viable. You know, if they enhance our Constitution and if they enhance our liberties and our freedom. I'll finish it by saying, as well as confusing free trade and free trade with fair trade, and I agree, there's fair trade or free trade, and that's a very difficult subject. And again, I congratulate you on your efforts. Americans devoutly want their country back, and I agree. But Americans, that means everyone. Everyone who sets foot here is an American, as far as I'm concerned. Let's work together to give it back. Now, I'd like to There's a good book. I haven't finished reading it yet. It's called Mexifornia. It's by Victor Davis Hanson. It's called The State of Becoming, and he talks about that issue. And that talks about the issue itself. There's one other issue that I want to talk about, and it's called Day of Deceit. It's the truth about FDR Pearl Harbor, Robert B. Stinnett. Now, the reason why I bring that one is that that gives you insight as how the government works. Not so much Pearl Harbor, which we knew about well in advance, years in advance, but it gives you an idea of when you realize that the government does have motives other than what you believe they are, you know, you'll start thinking a little differently. I suggest both of those two books. Now, immigration is a very difficult and complex issue. If we got the government out of it, we would be much better off. Much, much better off. We need to get the government out. The biggest problems that California is facing is because it's not being the people who are coming in are now expecting the government to bend for them politically so they can get their way, and they're causing all sorts of problems. If it was like we didn't have the immigration problems when we had large influxes of different people coming in, you know, different from those that were already here, because when they came in, there was no government interference at all. You came here, you starved. If we still had the same hands-off government today as we did back in the 1910s and in the teens of 100 years ago, right, we would not have this problem. Boy, our time is over. I didn't realize that. We talked a lot about this issue. Next, on Sunday evening, we have a Christine Smith, who is trying to get the nomination, the Libertarian nomination for presidency. And we'll be interviewing her on Sunday evening. On Thursday, the following Thursday, I want to continue, and we're going to talk about the abortion issue. And I'm going to continue a little bit more on the subject of immigration and abortion. They're totally separate issues if we have time. I do welcome you to call in at 903-551-2186 or send in your emails to us at comments@libertytalkradio.com. Okay? And with that, I'll play our bumper song again. And this is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, or phone in your questions to 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you are striving to protect them. Unfortunately, folks, there is no middle ground. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.